Okay, yes, good morning everybody. Welcome back. Here we are. It's our last week for the term, but we'll be busy with Yontif, Mirtz Hashem, and then before we know it, we'll be back again. As we said last week, incredible how things are such Ashkacha Pratis, but this is what we're up to, and today we are going to hopefully complete everything we missed out last week that we didn't manage, because I very much want to get a lot of insight into the Rosh Hashanah Psukim. So just a very quick recap on just the two Psukim, and then we're going to see some beautiful ideas. So, and we had a lot of questions that we left last week that we would like to not leave unanswered. So the Pasuk says, this is in Parshas Emor, Perek Chav Gimel, Pasuk Chav Gimel, and then Pasuk Chav Dalet, Vayidabra Hashem al Meishal Emor. We're in the middle of all of the Yomim Toivim, and here we are, Dabra al Bnei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, Lamer saying, B'chaydesh HaShvi, in the seventh month, a very important thing that will, as we questioned, it's not the first month, it's the seventh month. B'echad L'chaydesh, in the first day of the seventh month, Yiyeh L'chem Shabbosayn, it shall be for you a rest day. Zichrayin Trua, a Zichrayin Trua means a mention or a remembrance of the Trua, of the blasts. Mikra Kodesh, a calling of holiness. Kol Melechas Avodah Lo Yisasu, you shall not do any work of labor. Ve'ekraftem Isha LaHashem, and you will offer a fire offering to Hashem. And right away, the next pasuk goes already to Yom Kippur. We said there was another place in Parshas Pinchas, famously, where it also discusses Rosh Hashanah. The only real difference there, instead of saying Zichrein Trua, it calls it a Yom Trua. But as we said, we left with many, many questions. I'm just going to stop the share for a bit, because I'm just going to discuss something a little bit orally, and then we'll continue sharing afterwards, so we don't have to have the share open. But we want to understand what's going on. So last week, we mentioned a lot of the questions that we have on these psukim that are very interesting, because we just take it for granted, because we learn Rosh Hashanah before we learn the psukim in the Chumash. We learn it as children and we experience it, and we don't necessarily see how it's set out in the Torah. So today we'll just explore in a very, if you want to say, like ours is a Chumash year, so in a very Chumash year kind of a way, how Rosh Hashanah comes through in what we call Torah Shebiksav, in the written Torah. Obviously, the written Torah is incomplete without the Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral Torah, which is where we have a lot of what we celebrate Rosh Hashanah. But nevertheless, it's still very beautiful to see how it all originates in the written Torah, and how even in the written Torah, even though it's not clearly set out, but there's still hints to what Rosh Hashanah is as we know it. Okay, so as we said, it says Yom Trua, Zichrein Trua, a day of blowing a shofar, the Trua sound specifically, that broken sound, or a remembrance of the shofar, but it's missing quite a few things. First of all, it doesn't say the word Rosh Hashanah. Second of all, as we saw last week, it doesn't tell us why this day is chosen to be a Yom Trua. It just says it's a Yom Trua. It doesn't say that something happened on that day, as we saw with Pesach when we were taken out of Mitzrayim, or even Shavuos when all the harvest, when the food is harvested, or Sukkot when we bring in the food from the fields. It says nothing. It just says Yom Trua. And yet, for some reason, it was chosen. And what it doesn't say, which is almost the most important thing, is what it was chosen for, that it is, as we know it, Yom Hadin, the day of judgment. It doesn't say that in the Psukim, and so we have to understand, where does it all come from? How do the Chacham, where do we get this from? From the Psukim that we've seen. So again, as we mentioned last week, very important word that is mentioned in our Pasuk, the word Zikarain, which we will elaborate a little more today, we did last week a little bit, a concept of a remembrance, a focus, an internal focus, we'll see soon. But nevertheless, and obviously with what? Using the shofar. So we have to understand. So just, we'll take it step by step. Well, hopefully it'll be clear. I can see you, most of you. So if you have a question, I'm not so good with the chat, but if you like go like that, then I can say, then I'll see that there's a, I can unmute you. But hopefully it'll be clear. So we'll see like this, or at the end you can ask. Okay, so we understand that when we learn the Psukim in the Chumash initially, everywhere where it mentions Yontif, we said it mentions Yontif a few times, it seems to imply that the Jewish calendar really starts, as we know, from Nisan. Nisan is called the first month. Pesach is the first holiday always mentioned when we list the Yomim Tovim. And the main reason that's given to us is because that's when Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim and we became a nation. He did the tremendous miracle. He saved us. So we saw how our connection to Hashem became very revealed and very real, and it's the first month is the month of Nisan. So where do we get the concept that Rosh Hashanah, Tishrei, is the first month? Because obviously it is also a first month, because otherwise it wouldn't be called Rosh Hashanah. So where does that come from? So that's a very big question. Okay, so we have like this. We have a very interesting thing that, we know that there are two opinions as far as when Hashem created the world. There's the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua, who says the world was created in Nisan. That would make sense for that being the first month. There's an opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, who says that the world was created on the 25th day of the month of Elul, and therefore, obviously, Rosh Hashanah being the day Hashem created man. Even that still doesn't give us an answer. First of all, that's one opinion, but even that doesn't give us an answer to why this is the day of judgment, why this is considered the head of the year, just because that's when Hashem created the world. So we don't have enough based on that, and that's an opinion in the Medrash. But we do keep that in mind, helps us a little bit. But we need to get a lot more than that. Okay, so I have a beautiful shir that was given by, his name is Rabbi Menachem Leibtek, and he explains very, very beautifully a whole fascinating concept. And he says that we have to go back into the Chumash and look at the, so to speak, the structure, the way the year works, and all the different signs that we pick up from different places in the Chumash, which gives us a very beautiful picture. Now, what are we talking about? So here he says that there's a concept of what we call the agricultural year. The year that we begin on Pesach is what we would call the spiritual year, the year which is about the miracles, the connection we have to Hashem, taking us out of Mitzrayim, Hashem's intervening in nature. But let's look at the year from a different perspective, from an agricultural perspective. Now, obviously, we'll see at the end why that's even important to us, but in Eretz Yisrael, we understand, and especially in the earlier years, how that was extremely important. But what does this mean, the agricultural year? And why do I say that this perhaps is the time that the agricultural year begins? Where do I base that on? What proof do I have for that? Because obviously that's where I'm getting that somehow or other, this is the beginning of what we would call the agricultural year. So we have a few places in Chumash. So we have, for example, we have in Parshas Mishpatim, as I said, it mentions there a drop of the Yontifs. It doesn't mention Rosh Hashanah there. There it mentions Sukkis. It mentions, Pesach Shavuot, the Shalosh Regalim, Pesach Shavuot and Sukkis. And in Parshas Mishpatim, when it talks about the Yomim Tovim, it mentions, it says like three times a year, celebrate for me. And then it says, when it comes to Chag HaOsif, right? Chag HaOsif, as we know, is the time when you gather all of the grains and you bring it into your home, which is, as we know, Sukkis. And we know when Sukkis is. That's in our Psukim. It's on the 15th day of Tishrei. What does it say there? It uses the language Bitseis Hashanah, when the year is going out. So we see clearly that in the Chumash, Sukkis, which is in the month of Tishrei, is somehow connected to being the end of a previous year. So already we see a clue that Tishrei has something to do with the end of the previous year. Obviously, if it's the end of the previous year, it is the beginning of the new year. So far, we only have Sukkis, not Rosh Hashanah, but already giving us a little bit of a clue to this idea. And you, as we understand, you gather all the produce and you take it into your home. And so we see that there's an agricultural year that ends in Tishrei. Another place that we find it, and interestingly, that's very connected to this coming year, is the concept of Shemitah. So we know this year will be a Shemitah year, the seventh year of the cycle of in Eretz Yisrael. And when the Psukim tell us about the Shemitah year, when we have to actually have a starting date, right? Because there are many halachas, things that you are not permitted to do during the year of Shemitah. So you have to know, when does the Shemitah year actually start? So it's interesting because, again, not 100% clear, but what's picked up from a few different Psukim, it says like this. So in Parshas Behar, which will come to next, that's the next parsha, when it discusses the year of Shemitah, so there it gives an interesting thing. It says that there's a seventh year, cycle, and then it starts. And it actually tells us also that there is the concept of, as we know, the year, the Yovel, the Yovel is the 50th year, which is 7 cycles of Shemitah, and then you have a year of Yovel. So when it comes to the year of Yovel, actually, the Pasuk very, very specifically, I'll just tell you in English, it says, hey, whatever, Usvarta lecha, Sheva Shabbosos, you count 7 Shabbosos Shonim, 7 cycle of 7 cycles of, you know, the 7 Shemitah years, the years that are called Shabbos. Sheva Shonim, Sheva Pa'amim, right? 7 years, 7 times. Fahoyu lecha, Yemei, Sheva Shabbosos Hashonim, and then it gives us how many you'll have. 7 times 7, you'll have 49 years. Then, after that cycle, you will come through with blowing a shofar. When? In the 7th month. Ah, so here we have already something about the month of Tishrei, which is the 7th month, being a beginning of the cycle of Yovel, and therefore also we realize every Shemitah year begins in Tishrei, but it gives a specific date there for the Yovel. When is that shofar blown? Be'eser l'chaydesh, on the 10th day of the month. So it's not blown on Rosh Hashanah, it is blown right after Yom Kippur, but that doesn't mean that the Shemitah year or the Yovel year doesn't start on Rosh Hashanah, but we announce it on Yom Kippur. So some of the commentaries say, since the concept of Yovel is freedom, and we not just freedom, but we wipe away all debts, and Yom Kippur is when Hashem wipes away our debts, so therefore it makes sense that that's the time that we make the big proclamation that this is the year of Yovel. But we see already that it is very connected to the 7th month. And what is connected to the 7th month? That the 7th month is not just the number 7, rather it is the number 1. It's the first month of the Shemitah year, the first month of the Yovel year. So already we have a beginning of a concept of a Rosh Hashanah, if you want to say. A Rosh Hashanah meaning a month, which is the first month. That's the beginning, a little bit. Now, we have to understand a little more, though, because we still have to get to the actual date of Rosh Hashanah. We don't have anything about Rosh Hashanah yet, so let's understand where that comes from. So he says a very interesting thing. The place where we really have a mentioning of a concept of Rosh, that word Rosh, as we call it Rosh Hashanah, as we saw, it wasn't in the Psukim. Where did we get this idea of Rosh Hashanah? So it's a name we call it, we all call it, and yet where do we see it in the Torah? So I'll show you, this is one of the most beautiful Psukim, every Pasuk is beautiful, one of the beautiful Psukim in the Torah. It's in Parashas Ekev, and it's the Torah, it's talking about the difference when the Jewish people, now they are about to enter the land of Israel, and Hashem is telling them that the land of Israel is such a different land than the land of Egypt, where they had spent so much time. We know that when they were in the land of Egypt, they were very reliant on the Nile. That's all. You all had the Nile. It always did the irrigation for you. You didn't have to worry. You had water on tap. When Hashem tells the Jewish people, when you're going to enter the land of Israel, now things are going to start to change, right? And what's going to happen in the land of Israel? In the land of Israel, you are relying, obviously, on rain, because your main source of everything is from the agriculture. Where is the water going to come from? It's going to come from rain. And Hashem says to them, but don't worry, because I have a special supervision over the land of Israel. And what's the pasuk that says that? The beautiful pasuk. It says, Eretz asher einei Hashem elekechaba mireishis hashana ad achris hashana. So it's a land upon which the eye of Hashem is from the beginning of the year till the end of the year. So here we have a word, Reishis, Rosh, Rosh Hashanah. How do we know that it's Rosh Hashanah? Because we're talking about the rain. When does the agricultural year start, as we just saw? It starts in the Tishrei season, as we saw from the Shemitah. Another clue that it starts in the month of Tishrei is just simply the fact. When is the rainy season in Israel? We know. Mainly, when do we hope for rain? Is in Cheshvan and Kislev, right? That's when we're waiting for the rain really strongly. Because that's the beginning, so to speak, of the season where if it doesn't rain, as we know, in the month of Cheshvan and in the month of Kislev, we're in big trouble. None of the crops will grow afterwards in the right time, right? As we know, during the Pesach and Shavuot season and then the summer. So Tishrei, as we can see, marks the time, and that's why we know, what do we do, for example, on Shmini Atzeres? That's when we have a special tefillah for rain. We all know, because we know that it's not just rain. We know that especially in the olden times, but even nowadays, I think that our cycle of challenges began with the terrible drought, you know, the terrible drought that we had. We almost forgot about it when there was no rain just a few years ago, just before Corona started, and then there was the terrible fires. So it's a terrible thing when it doesn't rain. We know what happens. When it doesn't rain, people don't have what to eat. And especially in those days, it would cause immediate danger to the country, where the country became weak, wars increased. So it's a terrible disaster. And that's why we know that the Chachamim tell us that if it doesn't rain in the month of Cheshvan and Kislev, immediately the Chachamim establish many fast days throughout the month of Kislev and Tevis to ensure and to beg Hashem that rain should come, because it's such an important part of everything. But when does this all begin? When does this whole cycle begin? It begins in the month of Tishrei. Now, that still doesn't explain what Rosh Hashanah is, so to speak, as far as a Yom HaDin. It's nice, it's the beginning of the agricultural year. But what does that have to do with the way we celebrate Rosh Hashanah? And what more, what does it have to do with the incredible importance, the value that we put upon the day of Rosh Hashanah? So that's why we have to go a little bit further. So we see just a very interesting thing. He explains beautifully that even before we go further, if we think about it, what that means is that the rain, especially nowadays, we have a little bit of a detachment from it. We can feel a bit detached. We, you know, we think we just get the food from coals. But obviously, we all know that we are very, very dependent on the rain. So in a sense, it's almost very interesting. You know, when we say the beautiful tefillah, Unesana Taikif, and we ask Hashem and we say, you know, we're all passing under him, and he's going to decide who's going to live and who's going to die, who's going to, you know, in all the different ways. So the truth is, as he says, that in a way, almost, the early rainy season is almost the determinant for who's going to live and who's going to die. It's almost like the Unesana Taikif, because that's what sets the tone for all the blessings for the year. Okay, that's all very nice, as we say, but we still have to understand a little bit deeper. So what we can say, we'll start to say, and we'll develop this a little bit more, is that that already gives us a little bit of a clue as far as the concept of the month of Tishrei being a time that we start to focus that we need Hashem. We need Hashem because he's the source of the rain. And if not for Hashem causing things to grow, well, we won't be alive, we won't live. So we as Jews know we don't depend on the natural cycle, so to speak, whenever the scientists say that it's going to be a rainy season or not. We know that ultimately it's up to Hashem. And therefore, obviously, we understand that in anticipation of the rainy season, it makes sense for us to focus, and it makes sense for Hashem to give us a designated time to focus on whom we are dependent, who we are dependent on, and therefore ask him and beg him that as it starts to unfold, it should unfold in a positive way and it should rain in the right time. So now we understand a little bit more why it makes sense for Rosh Hashanah already to be a time that we focus on our depending on Hashem. If we're dependent on Hashem, as we understand with everything, what does that mean? When you're dependent on somebody, when you come and ask them for something, a person usually, if they are, I guess, not even just tactful, but if they're a mensch, you don't come to somebody to ask them for a very big favor if you owe them something large, if you've done something bad to them. Rather, what will you do? You will first look yourself in the mirror and you'll say, what kind of a relationship do I have with this person? Is there something I need to fix first? And only then will I be able to put in my request. So you can already see how the theme fits with the Rosh Hashanah and the Yom Kippur before we get to the Sukkot and the Shemini Atzeres, especially when we ask for the rain. So we have an interesting thing. So again, we still have this idea that Shemini Atzeres is more the rainy time, but nevertheless, we see already that we want to precede that with first focusing, which is what we do on Rosh Hashanah, and then Yom Kippur, after we focused on Rosh Hashanah and we've accepted Hashem as our king and we know that he is the one that is ultimately in control of everything and therefore he is the only one that could supply us with the rain if he chooses to. And then we take proper stock during Yom Kippur and we do tshuva and then we hope we are eligible, so to speak, for Hashem to literally seal us and the whole world for a good year. And then on Shmini Atzeres, when we start to ask for the rain, we don't feel like we are coming owing something, so to speak. We feel like we are coming ready to approach Hashem, obviously with humility, but ready to approach Hashem. We are here. We want rain. We need rain. The world needs rain. So it sort of flows. That's all very nice. That explains a little bit of the concept of Rosh Hashanah. It does. That is the beginning. Reish Hashanah, Ad Achris Hashanah. It explains the idea why it would be a Yom Hadin, a day of judgment. But what's the concept of the Shofar, right? Because the Chumash doesn't call it Yom Hadin. It doesn't call it Rosh Hashanah. It calls it Yom Truah, specifically Yom Truah, as we said, either Zichrein Truah or Yom Truah. And as we know, the Shofar has different sounds. We know that we mentioned last week there's the Tkiah sound, which is the how do you say that? That's like sort of the clear, unbroken sound. And then there's the Truah, which is the broken sound. If you go back again, as we are doing, we're looking now in Teresh Abiksav, and you look and analyze the concept of the Shofar going back in history. The Shofar was a very, very well-used instrument in those times. So there was a Shofar, there were also Chatzaitres, which were trumpets, which were also similar. What was the idea? When were they used? So by the Jewish people, they had specific times where Hashem actually instructs them. But even generally in society, when people would go out to war, the truah specifically, that broken sound, was very, very used. You know, there's an interesting story in Shoftim, in the time of the Shoftim, of the judges, where Gideon, you know, he was a very big warrior, and he went out to war, and he had a very small group of soldiers with him, a very small group. And obviously the Plishtim were many, many more. So what did he do? And it was, I think, an instruction from the Navi said, he only had 300 men. So what he did was he gave each of the 300 men their own shofar. So when usually the general would blow. So when the Plishtim heard 300 truas being blown, they thought there were 300 generals and obviously thousands of soldiers. So they were petrified. So you see from here that the idea of a trua, or even any kind of a sound that you make, is a war cry. That's what it is. It's a cry of war. It's a cry of something. Now, what does it have to do? And why are we specifying here the sound of the trua? Now, just to remember, we said, the Gemara tells us that we never blow a trua on its own. We always precede it, especially on Rosh Hashanah, with a tkiah before and a tkiah afterwards, right? So there is a difference in the Torah between the tkiah sound, the purpose of the tkiah sound. Just simply, before we get to anything deeper than that, just simply, the tkiah sound in the times of the Torah was more of a peaceful call. It was a time when we had to just gather people for a peaceful reason. Perhaps it was also a time when it let people know that the war is over, you can go back home. So it was a more peaceful sound. That was a sound of, in a way, it was a more calming sound. But when you heard the truah, you knew, uh-oh, this was a sound of battle, if you want to say, whichever way it was. It was a sound that something has to get done. So it was not a happy occasion in a sense. It was more, it would instill you with a sense of fear. That's what it would do. When you heard the truah, something was wrong or something needed to be attended to that could cause danger. So it was a sound which instilled somebody with fear. So you can see that already we have a little bit of a clue, but we have to understand what does that have to do with Rosh Hashanah and why are we calling it, you know, the day of Truah, the Yom Truah, Yom Zichrein Truah. Actually, interesting, he brings a very interesting thing. There's Tzfanya, one of the minor prophets, we call them the Treyasar, the smaller prophets, not minor, but he was smaller. And he has a very beautiful, a very scary prophecy, which is interesting to learn one day. Just read you one or two psukim in the English. He says like this, he says, at that time, I will search Yerushalayim with candles and I will punish the men who say to themselves, Hashem does not reward, nor does he punish. The great day of Hashem is coming. And then in it, he says, he goes through a few more things which are there to instill, so to speak, people with a sense of almost, I don't know if the word is fear, but awe in a sense, and almost like to catch themselves. And he says, Yom Shofar HaTruah, because that's what it means. It's a day, it's a truah. When you say the word truah, it means it's a time to examine. It's a time to say something is not right. So when we use that word, we understand we're talking about a time, and as the Torah says, that in the seventh month, but we've already established, although it is called the seventh month because it is the seventh month from Nisan, but it is still the first month for many things, especially for the agricultural year. So it does have a Rosh Hashanah. The Torah tells us it is Yom Teruah. Why? Because we want to create an atmosphere of a sense of impending war. What's the impending war? Again, on a simple level, the whole world is at stake. Hashem is deciding what kind of a year is he going to give it. As we said, it sounds simple, the rain. The rain is not simple. The rain means, it symbolizes all the material, the physical blessings, all the natural things that we need for the world to sustain itself. Even health is dependent on the rain. We know when there's a year of drought, it causes terrible illnesses. So everything is dependent. So therefore, we have this Yom Zichron Teruah, or Yom Teruah, this impending, so to speak, big court case that's coming up where Hashem is deciding. So it's a struggle, it's a war. It's this thing where I better do something, otherwise who knows how the year will unfold. So this is why it's called that in the Torah, Yom Teruah. It gives us that concept that it really is a Yom Hadin, a day of judgment, as we say. Okay, now just another important thing. We have a very interesting thing. So we said that when we blow the Teruah, so we always blow with a Tkiah first and a Tkiah after, and we'll see soon some of them first, but just in a very quick way, because the idea being that even though it is meant to give us a little bit of a shake-up, that we should be more focused, that we should realize that Hashem is literally sitting on his throne and deciding, but we should do it with confidence. We should do it with a feeling of being enveloped with that Hashem really is our Father and wants to give us a good year. So we have the Tkiah first, so we feel a little bit of confidence, a little bit of love, so to speak, of security, and yet, as soon as the tekiah is over, we do have to blow the Teruah sound, which means we have to start trembling, and we feel broken, and we cry, and that's what the Teruah sound is. We have many psukim in the Torah which tell us how the Teruah is to do with crying. It is a sound of brokenness. It is a sound of humility. That's what it is when a person feels broken. And therefore, what happens is, when you do that, we daven really strongly that Hashem should actually decide good things for the coming year. What does this really mean for us? What is it in a deeper way almost, but it's similar idea. What this means is, and this is a very powerful thing that's not just a lesson for the day of Rosh Hashanah, but it's a lesson for every single day. What it means is that as Jews, we understand that the simple rain, the simple natural things that happen, are all obviously in whose hands? In the hands of Hashem. We know that, we acknowledge that, and we acknowledge that it's Hashem who decides if it's going to rain or if it's not going to rain. We realize we are totally dependent on Hashem. The whole world is dependent on Hashem. This is the attitude that we should live our whole life with. And we're not just talking about the massive things, and we're not just talking about the spiritual things. In the simple, physical, material way, Hashem controls everything. This is what Rosh Hashanah is. Rosh Hashanah is the beginning, so to speak, of the year. It's a Zichrein Teruah, as we said. What is a Zichrein Teruah? A very beautiful word. That was in our Pasuk. A remembrance of a Teruah. But it's a day that we remember Hashem, and that Hashem, in turn, remembers us. What does that mean? We proclaim, and this is what we do throughout the davening in so many beautiful psukim, we proclaim to ourselves, and then as we saw Matzah Shabbos, we are the light that all the nations look to, so we are the ones who spread this message by living with this conviction, that it is up to Hashem to give us a good year. It's up to Hashem to decide that the rains will fall. So we realize that he is the master over nature. And this is what Rosh Hashanah is. Rosh Hashanah is the time to focus and realize more than anything else that Hashem created the world, continues to create the world, and he is the master and is the controller and runs the world. And yet at the same time, Hashem gave us, and this is such an amazing gift, the ability to take this special holy time of Rosh Hashanah, blow that shofar, thereby inside of us remind ourselves that, and of course, In turn, Hashem remembers us in a good way, in a positive way. So this, as you can see, is a very beautiful way. So this is, as he explains, why, and not why, but how Rosh Hashanah evolves, if you want to say, in Tanakh, in the written Torah. Of course, we have much more in the oral Torah. And you see a few beautiful mefarshim now, but I just want to see if there was anything that I missed out. And obviously, we know that what do we take to blow the shofar? We take specifically an ayil, a ram, right? The horn from a ram. Why? Because we want to remember Akedas Yitzchak, right? That's what we want to remind Hashem. Again, because the idea being that it's a reminder that we are ready to serve Hashem. Again, that gives us that pathway to then asking for Hashem to give us the rain, because when Hashem gives us the rain and things grow and then we have bountiful good things, then we can serve Him even better with all the blessings that He will shower upon us. And this is the idea of the shofar in that sense. Just one more beautiful thing before I do a few of the mefarshim inside in the Chumash, that we might do some of them orally, but I'll just show you. So there's another very beautiful concept also with this concept of zichrein. We keep mentioning zichrein shrua. So the word zichrein shrua, which was in our pasuk, which means a remembrance of the trua. So there's an interesting thing that's explained. This is based on Rav Soloveitchik explains it. It's an interesting thing that with the mitzvah of tkiyas shofar, every mitzvah has different, if you want to say, different structures about how you fulfill the mitzvah. So most mitzvahs, you can fulfill the mitzvah even when you're not necessarily concentrating 100%. You're not so aware, you're not so focused, right? But there are certain mitzvahs that you do have to focus more to actually fulfill the mitzvah. One of those mitzvahs is the mitzvah of shofar. And it's an interesting thing. It says that the shofar has, so to speak, two components. There's the ma'isa mitzvah, that's like blowing the shofar, as we say. And then there's actually the kiyum ha-mitzvah, which means the internal recognition. That's zichrein trua. That zichrein means remember, but it means to focus. So the shofar is something that we have to work inwardly. It's not just that we just passively let somebody else blow and we happen to hear it. It actually has to be heard in a way that it affects us, that it does something to us internally. This is the zichrein trua. What's the concept? Very interesting. It has to, so to speak, trigger an emotional response in us, to us to really fulfill the mitzvah of the shofar. As we mentioned, the trua, especially, is the concept of fear. It says, like the pasuk in Amos says, that will the shofar be blown in the city and the nation will not tremble? So it causes that real inner focus. Interestingly enough, it's very, very similar to the concept of davening. That's what it is. Shofar is very similar to davening itself. And that's also why, what's the shape of the shofar that we use? We use a bent shape. Our shofar is meant to be bent. What's the idea of bent? So I think we mentioned last, the imagery is of a person bent over, crying and davening to Hashem. We do, we shake, we go down, and that's what the shofar is. Because the shofar is that sense of humility, but that inner focus on the fact that we are totally dependent on Hashem. But even deeper, just a very beautiful thing. We say like this with the shofar. We said we use the ram's horn. What don't we use? It says we shouldn't use from a cow, from a calf. Why? Obviously, we want to remember the Akedas Yitzchak, how Avraham was willing to sacrifice his son. But what we don't want to remember is the Egel Hazav, obviously. We don't want to remember the golden calf. So you don't take a shofar from a calf, because as we know, famously, you don't take an accuser to be the advocate. That's not a good idea. So we don't want to bring the calf into our Rosh Hashanah. Not a good idea. Definitely not. But interestingly, there's a fascinating thing. If you look, especially in Yom Kippur, if you look at the Avodah, the service of the Kohen Gadol, when the Kohen Gadol would do the service on Yom Kippur, he actually had two sets of clothing. He had his regular beautiful garments, they were magnificent garments, like royal garments, that he wore for certain things that he did. But during the year, he wore them all the time. But on Yom Kippur, certain activities were done with those 8 garments. But then he had white, 4 white special garments that he used to put on. He would go to the mikveh and he would have to change that he would wear when he went into the Holy of Holies, into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. What's the reason? So it's explained that the eight garments actually contained gold in it. Some of the threads were made of gold. Again, just like we don't want to use a calf or a cow, we don't want to use gold. Yom Kippur and gold is not such a good idea. Some people actually have a custom not to wear gold on Yom Kippur. I don't know, it's just a custom. They take off the gold that they have because of this idea of not remembering the golden calf. It's a custom for some people. So we see that the Kohen Gadol didn't want to wear his golden clothing when he went into the Holy of Holies. But what that shows is, he did wear it at other parts of Yom Kippur, but the Holy of Holies, there, lifnai v'lifnim, in the innermost, deepest parts, there we want to be pristine. We don't want to mention anything which could, God forbid, cause any kind of damage. So we find a fascinating thing with the shofar. It says like this, the shofar is an instrument that we use, and we don't blow it necessarily, for sure not, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's blown everywhere, even this year, outside, wherever you're going to blow it. The shofar can be blown anywhere. And which means what we would imagine is that it wouldn't be so important. We wouldn't have to be so careful where we take the shofar from. And yet we are extra careful because the shofar does have an association spiritually with the Holy of Holies. And it actually affects our Holy of Holies, which we have within ourselves, the deepest parts of our neshama. Therefore, that's why we say that the shofar is such an important part. And that's why in the Torah, it is called Yom Trua or Yom Zichrein Trua. That's the essence of the day. To the point that there's actually a fascinating Gemara that, this is not a halacha shiur, but just giving you an idea that in the Gemara, there's a whole discussion that if somebody has a choice, they have two cities that they can go to. We wish we could travel, but we can't. Two cities where they are, there's no minyan or there's no anything, no shofar. And they have two cities. One city that they can go to that they know they'll hear the shofar, but they won't be davening. Another city, they'll be davening and no shofar. So which one should you choose? And the Gemara says the most important thing is the shofar. The shofar is the most important thing. So this year, the truth is, it's actually quite practical for us. Unfortunately, we will all daven. No, that's for sure. But we will not have a minyan. We won't daven the way we're used to. But the shofar, we all have to make a way of hearing. Whichever way it is, we'll hear the shofar. And the shofar, as we can say, takes precedence. And this is the idea, as we say, this is what it is. This is the essence of the day of Rosh Hashanah. Now, I'm just going to share the screen. So I'm going to show you a few beautiful ideas. Mostly orally, because we don't have that much time. Let's just show you. Okay. So let me just show you some beautiful thoughts here. Okay, so the Sefer HaChinuch, he explains what's this idea of the shofar, but he actually doesn't even explain so much shofar. He explains more what's the idea of Rosh Hashanah. So we said already that Rosh Hashanah is the beginning, if you want to say, of that year where we know when we acknowledge that everything we have comes from Hashem. But he actually stops more on the word Zichrein, and he says it's a very special day. And this theme is repeated many times. He says like this, what we're meant, it's obviously a day of focus. That's what the word Zichrein means. Zichrein is not just memory. It's to conjure, it's actually to bring up, to bring to the fore what we sometimes have underneath. Sometimes it's covered up, like that's what a memory is. We don't necessarily think about it. So the day of Rosh Hashanah, we're meant to focus on things that we sometimes leave to the back of our mind. What is one of the things he says? So very quickly he says that we have to remember that Rosh Hashanah is a day of chesed, kindness. Where does kindness come into Rosh Hashanah? So he says, Shehayah mechaz de'akel, it's the kindness of Hashem for al bruah, for his creations. Lif kaidaisam, to actually, so to speak, count them, to remember them. Vilirais ma'aseyim, and to actually examine their actions. Yoim echad b'chol shana v'shana, one day every single year. How is that a kindness of Hashem? So he says, K'dei shala yisrabu ha'avaynais, in order so that the sins shouldn't add up. It shouldn't accumulate too many sins. So that we actually can still change, that we can still find atonement. And that's why he says, V'hu Rav Chesed, it's an abundance of kindness. Mate klape chesed v'kevan shehem mu'atim. since they are few, ma'ivir aleihem, so we'll get forgiveness. It's like we say, a good teacher doesn't pile up the work all at once, rather staggers it so that it's doable. And here we see that every single year Hashem gives us an opportunity to go through the month of Elul and then to have a beautiful, incredible day of Rosh Hashanah so that all of our negative things don't accumulate too much and then we can still fix it. That's the idea of every single year. And he says, what happens if unfortunately, sometimes we do have sins perhaps that we've done that year that need a cleansing, so they're a little bit deeper. So it says, Nifram Mayhem Ma'at Ma'at. Hashem in his kindness, what he does is he spreads out the punishment slowly, slowly. He helps us, if you want to say, purify ourselves slowly, slowly, so it doesn't become too difficult for us. And also, as he says, because unfortunately, if he wouldn't do it every year, what could happen is that the whole world can be deserving of being destroyed because there's so much negativity. This way, the negativity doesn't add up too much. And that's why he says it's very important to make it into a yontif. And it should be, as he says, Uliyosei, Beminyan Mayadeh Hashana Hayikarim, that it should be counted amongst the designated days, the precious designated days. Because as we said, it didn't give us a reason in the Chumash, right? It only said it's a Yom Teruah. And here he says, this is why. It's a special kindness of Hashem. And as he says, obviously it's a day that we realize that Hashem is Mitzad Shu Yom Hadin. It's a day Hashem is judging. And judging all living things. Roi Lamed Bay Biyir of Afachad. So it is a precious day and it is a day of kindness, but it's still a day where we stand in awe and in trembling. Yaiser Mikol Shar Maya de Ashana, more than all the other Yomim Ta'ivim. And that's why we say Zichrain Trua. As we say, Kiat Trua Kol Shavar, it's a broken sound. Lirmais She Yishbar Kol Echad, Toikef Yitzray Hara. It's a hint to us that we should all be breaking the strength of our Yetzihara. So that's what we should be breaking. We should be breaking all the negative parts of ourselves. When we hear the broken sound of the shofar, it's for us to, so to speak, focus and internalize that it's a time for us to break the negativity that we have inside of us. V'yisnachem al ma'isav harayim, and we should regret any of the negative things we might have done. And that's why, and he says, then he also says, that's why we don't say Hallel. That's a question that people might not realize. You realize on Rosh Hashanah there is no Hallel. Every Yontif, including Rosh Chodesh, we say Hallel, and Rosh Hashanah no Hallel. So the Gemara tells us, because the famous thing that Hashem is standing there with all the books open, right? The books and deciding. And he says, the books should be open, and I should be deciding who's going to live and who's going to die, and you should be singing Hallel. Doesn't go together. So it's not, in that sense, a joyous time in the same way as the other Yomim Tovim. And yet it's a time of incredible chesed. I just want to tell you something orally that I'm going to see. And a beautiful Meha Shilayach, a Chassidish Rebbe, explains also very beautifully the same idea. He says that on Rosh Hashanah, we mentioned Rosh Hashanah, the Torah gives us a date, the first day of the seventh month. But there were many beautiful things, the Medrash tells us, that happened on Rosh Hashanah, amongst which, some people are not aware, is that that's when Yosef went out of prison. Yosef was finally released from prison on Rosh Hashanah. Another thing we know, that it was the day that Hashem created the world or created man. And also, when the Jewish people were in Egypt, they weren't redeemed yet, but that's when they stopped actually being enslaved, doing the work, was on Rosh Hashanah. So we see something incredible about Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, the theme is, it is a day of kindness. That's why we have the Tkia, and then the Truah, and then the Tkia. So it's a judgment with kindness. The world was created, we say, Olam Chesed Yibaneh. Hashem created the world on a foundation of kindness. What does that mean? When Hashem created the world, there was nothing that deserved or so to speak, he didn't owe anybody anything. It was out of pure generosity. That's what the world is. It's a generosity, a gift, so to speak. It's Hashem's kindness. What happens on Rosh Hashanah is that energy of that original kindness that Hashem created the world with, which means an undeserving kindness, is again awakened, is again revealed, and that's what we tap into every single Rosh Hashanah. That's what's literally revealed on Rosh Hashanah. There was another very beautiful thing, I hope we get to it. Anyways, it was in my other thing about it. Just want to see a few more. Let's see if I can do them orally. a few more beautiful ideas. We'll just see. So the Abar Ben El also says the word zichrein truah. What does it mean? A remembrance of a truah. So he says, because what we're supposed to be remembering, this is a little bit similar to what we mentioned before with the agricultural year, but he takes it even deeper. He says that, generally speaking, a human being is, so to speak, under the jurisdiction of nature, because that's how Hashem created the world. But he says what we have to remember on Rosh Hashanah is that that's true. Hashem created the world and it runs according to nature. However, as a Jew, we can focus on something deeper. We can focus on something higher and thereby lift ourselves above the natural order. And we don't necessarily have to be dependent on what is supposed to happen naturally. And he gives lots of examples. And he says, so this is the idea of the truah. It's a freedom. We should realize, and that's a few of the Mefarshim say, it's a day of freedom. We are free from any constraints of nature. That's what Rosh Hashanah is. And therefore, he says, it will remind us that we should awaken to do tshuva so that we are not under the jurisdiction of any of the natural order who might have decided to do something negative because we deserve it. Also, it remembers the Akedah. We remember Matan Torah. And that's when we definitely, at the time of Matan Torah, when Hashem gave us the Torah, that's when he lifted us beyond nature. As it says, he chose us to be his special nation, meaning a nation which is not bound by nature. To remember Kibbutz Goliath, we have to remember that Hashem is going to gather all the exiles. And to remember, of course, Tchiyas HaMesim, that Hashem is going to bring even those who have passed on back to life, which is the greatest miracle of creation. So again, remembering and focusing on the specialness of the day. And I just want to read you one line here, a very beautiful one. And he says, this is what it's that we have to remember. Zeh Enyan Bisfarim Haniftachim LiYisrael. That's what it means, that the books of Hashem are open for the Jewish people, because that's the time when we can rise above whatever it says there. Hashem can change it, so to speak. He can override. Ashrei Ha'am Yoydei Srua. Fortunate is the nation who knows the truah. What does that mean? We know the truah. We know the secret to the truah. We know that we are only under the jurisdiction of Hashem, and that's why the pasuk used the word Shabbosayim. As we said, it's a day of Shabbos. Menuchas nafshis. Menucha nafshis. It's a day of inner peace. Our soul is at peace. Ubitul machshavos ha'olam hazeh. It's a day that we literally do not think of our day-to-day worries, even though it's interesting because in a sense we do, because we're davening for everything should change and everything should be good, but we daven in a way where we feel elevated, above it all, where we realize that we are enveloped, so to speak, by the protection of Hashem, and therefore we are not ruled by all of the things that we look like we are ruled, as we say. And that's the idea of the truah, to waken us up to tshuva. And then, as we say, and then we will daven. And that's it. I just want to say, and also this furnace says it's a member to remember that it's a day of simcha, interestingly, uses that word. Why? What will bring us to joy? The joy is, as he says, because when we realize that we have a king who does love us and does give us this extra power, so to speak, he has the power, but therefore lifting us beyond nature, that fills us with incredible joy. That's what he says. He's our salvation, and he fills us with tremendous joy. The Al-Sheikh HaKadosh says something also very beautiful. We did part last week, but this week I'll show you a very beautiful thing. He says that the Tziyayim HaDin, it's a day of judgment, but it's a very different day of judgment to other people. When we think about it, I think nowadays we see it more with the politicians. When they get up every single day, what do? They announce the numbers, and then comes the police chief, and what does he say? How many people broke the law? I don't know, I haven't listened in a few days, I'm not sure. How many infractions he has given? Why do they say that? What's the point? Because they want to put the fear into the people, right? That's the idea. So the Al-Sheikh HaKadosh says, when Hashem gets up to judge us, he's not like the kings of the world. Kings of the world, when they get up to judge, they actually prefer if people are guilty. Why? Because if people are guilty, they can punish them. When they punish people, that gives them, in a sense, that sense of strength, but it also makes other people afraid of them, right? It gives them much more power. That's what it does. People are afraid. It gives them power. Hashem is looking for the good in us. He's looking for us to be innocent. He wants to give us a good year. So to Hashem, he wants to, as the Al-Shech HaKadosh says, he wants the right, not the left. He wants to find people who have kept the law, who have done the right thing, so to speak, and not have to hold anybody up as an example, because he doesn't need that to ensure his sense of power. That's not what Hashem needs. Okay, that's a very beautiful way. Also, wanted to show you one. There's so many. Beautiful, Reb Shamshon Falhirsch says it so beautifully. He also says that when we use the word zikara, and sometimes people might think of it as a memory of past, something that happened in the past. He says, no, this has nothing to do with the past. How do we know? All the other Yamim Tovim, first it says the name of the Yontif, or it identifies the Yontif, and then it gives a little bit more of a description of the Yontif. Like, for example, it says, Yom HaKippurim, the day of Yom Kippur, and then it says it's a day where you will be, where you will suffer, you know, you will afflict yourself, right? You don't eat, you don't drink, right? With Rosh Hashanah, it doesn't give us a name, but it calls it Yom Zichrein Truah, but how it says it, first it says, Yeh lachem Shabbosayin, right? It will be like a Shabbos day. And then it says what it is. It's a Yom Truah. Why does it do it that way? Because he says it's not a memory for the past. Rather, Ella Hazmana. The word Zikaren, we should actually read it more as a invitation. It's an invitation, Lipu'ulais Ba'atzmeinu, that we should act, P'ilas La'atzmeinu. I think it's an invitation for us to work on ourselves, for us to focus internally. And he says it very beautifully after. He says like this, what's the idea? So he says also that we learn a Gzeira Shava. That's how we know that it's the idea of, as we said, a Yom Hadin, because it's to do with the Yovel. But what is the Yovel? Remember, the Yovel is the year, the 50th year, the Jubilee year. One of the biggest halachas of the Yovel is, that's when we all debts are annulled, all slaves go free, all land returns to its original owner, which means that all things that were bound, that were tied, right, are untied now. Everything is freed. That's what it is. So he says, the Yovel, we blow the shofar, lahatir es kishrei shibud ha'adam l'nechasim. We are actually untying the connection between the person and their material goods, right? Everything has to revert back to its original owner. You have to let your slaves go free. What's Rosh Hashanah? Uber Rosh Hashanah, lahatir kol kesher zar, by nikshar ha'adam, that we should, again, untie any knot, which is a foreign knot, which you shouldn't have had to begin with. In other words, things that you were connected to that you shouldn't have been connected to. And which is what? What shouldn't you have been connected to? Anything which is chutz mehakesher l'Hashem ulemitzvaysav. The only thing that we should feel bound by, the only thing that we should be compelled by, is Hashem and his mitzvahs. Nothing else imprisons us. That's not imprisoning, that's actually a beautiful thing, but nothing else controls us. Nothing else holds us. The only thing we are tied to is to Hashem and his mitzvahs. So when we blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, we should remember, we should focus, we should literally work on that we break all of those bounds, all those ties, all those knots that we have created and that we think we are bound to because we have, so to speak, so much strength in them, to all the negative things, the negative anything, negative people, negative anything. We break them, negative thoughts, negative actions, and we strengthen our connection, our knot with Hashem. That's what he says. And now, just last, a beautiful thing. As we said, the tkiya comes before, right? And then, it's an interesting thing. So he says like this, that you don't have a trua without a tkiya, you don't have a tkiya without a trua, because he says like this, that when you have a day of joy, Yom Simcha, hatachlis hu atkiya, right? The main thing is the tkiya, as we said, because tkiya is the sound of joy. But then you bring the trua in also. Why? Just to make sure that the joy doesn't cause you to do something wrong. You don't get wild, right? So you have the trua attached to the tkiya. But when you have a day of judgment, which is like Rosh Hashanah, what do? Like a war day, he says. So the main thing is the trua. But why do we blow the tkiya? Hatkiya ba imay litziruf. So you attach the tkiya with the trua, which is the sound of war. Sheloi yisya'esh min hatikva v'hageula. A very important line again, that we should not give up, we should not be despondent of any hope and redemption. A very important message of Rosh Hashanah. The shofar is bent, we're blowing a truah, we are broken, we have done things wrong. But what we have to remember always is that there is tikva, there's always hope, and there's always redemption. That's what comes before, and that's what comes afterwards. That's why we have both of those sounds. Oh, there was such another, I'm sorry, I don't know if I have one more beautiful one. Let me just see if I could remember which one it was. There was another beautiful one. Okay, I don't know if I remember. Okay. When I share, just as I'm trying to find it, maybe I'll just tell you that when it talks about the Tanya talks about Rosh Hashanah being also, as we mentioned, that famous pasuk that Hashem, so to speak, looks at, he supervises the land of Israel from the beginning of the year till the end of the year, right? And when is that? From Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. So the Tanya, the Alter Rebbe, explains something really quite strong, which fills us with a sense of trepidation as well as an incredible, as we say, it's an interesting combination, an incredible closeness to Hashem. That Hashem watches over the world every year, all the time, as we know. And there is obviously a beautiful energy of Hashem coming down. That's what creates the world. But every single year on Rosh Hashanah, Hashem floods the world with a new, higher energy that has never been before. Every year, Rosh Hashanah, we get a new light of Hashem. But what happens is that the night before we blow the shofar, Hashem sort of retracts a little bit. And it's a time of, as we say, judgment, where he's looking at the world and deciding and looking and seeing. And then the new light, the new energy comes as we blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. That's why the pasuk says, Mireishis Hashanah ad Achris Shana, from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. And the word Reishis is missing the Aleph, because there's a few hours there that are actually quite scary, where the world is, in a sense, really being judged. And those are the few hours where Hashem, obviously Hashem is creating the world, we wouldn't be here otherwise, and obviously we tap into and we have the energy of Hashem, but yet it is more hidden. And when we blow the shofar, we get the new revelation. But the idea being that every single year on Rosh Hashanah, there is a new light of Hashem that comes into the world. Now, obviously, we're not so spiritual. We might not feel it. But what it definitely does do is that it gives the power that everything that was in the previous year can literally transform and change from one extreme to another. So we shouldn't go into Rosh Hashanah thinking, oh, it's just going to be more of the same. Everything is so negative and everything's just going to continue. It doesn't work that way. It's going to be a new year, a good year, a sweet year, a powerful year. And when we blow the shofar and we remember, as we say, Zichron Truah, we focus inward and we realize that Hashem is giving us tremendous kindness, tremendous goodness, and He wants to shower us. All we have to do is remember that it comes from Him. That's all we have to do. All we have to do is realize that everything we have, we depend on Him. As we said, this is one of the big messages of the shofar. And then Hashem will give us, Emirtz Hashem, a really, as we say, a shana tova metuka, a sweet year. That's what we ask for. Not just a good year, but a sweet year. A year that we feel as good with all the brachas that we should all be able to share. And yes, we should all have and all be able to share with our families, share with each other, with the whole world. I want to just make that you can unmute yourself. Let me see. There we go. So there was something else, but I don't remember.